Okay, Shavua Tov, everyone. Thank you so much for everyone for coming, and I do have to say thank you for the Goldsmans to hosting. Usually it's in the past you've had it at their house, and especially when it's mostly Shabbos, that's the real experience, you know, with the tea, and usually it's very cold. Those are my memories, you know, from my youth back a couple months ago. But as I say, even when it's physically not at their house, they're always very helpful with strategizing about ideas and promoting it. And Debbie asked where the cookies. And it's always very, very, very helpful for that, and it's very much appreciated. Just a note, because we feel like when we ended Shabbos, there were two. Unfortunate losses to the Jewish community. Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks passed away, and Rav David Feinstein passed away. And both of these leaders have had different roles within the Jewish community. Rabbi Sacks was probably the most articulate communicator of Torah values and of Jewish belief, and had a tremendous impact in that regard. And Rav David Feinstein was one of the preeminent poskim in North America. He was someone who many others consulted. And as I say, what I think they both had in common, at least the reputations that they had by people who knew them well, was they were incredibly humble. That no question was too basic, no person was unimportant, and even though they were considered very important and they were tremendous leaders, they were extremely humble, which I think is something that we don't necessarily see in all leaders, but in a Baruch Hashem, these are the way our Torah leaders conduct themselves. I think something for us to learn. So the topic for tonight is a current one and a dangerous one. And it's dangerous because the topic is goes back a long way, even though it's we're applying it to modern issues. The issue of mesira, of reporting to authorities, is something that's considered a very serious issue. And needless to say, but I will say it, is that definitely shouldn't extrapolate in a practical halacha. These questions are of the utmost severity from this. But I want to focus on a couple aspects of this question. Is what are the general guidelines of mesira, of informing what cases is it not allowed, what cases might be allowed? Is there any difference between the types of governments that were under discussion in Talmudic times and even until more recent times, and the governments in countries where we live that have law and order, at least officially? And even beyond that, is there a difference in the state of Israel? So I think in order to address the question about reporting COVID violations currently, so we have to see that question really more broadly. But can everyone, is my connection okay? Okay. Yeah. All right. Just making sure. Okay. So I will share my screen. Okay. So since the COVID pandemic started, there was a lot of tension within the Jewish world, particularly within the religious world, about shutting down, when to shut down, and if places weren't shutting down past when the law required it, if it was appropriate, required, or forbidden to report these COVID violations to the authorities to put a stop to it. So there were several positions reported in the Jewish news in the Jewish news sources, and one disclaimer about that it's something that's that people in the know will tell you, is don't necessarily assume that everything that's reported is reported in context and is even accurate. Just like any halakhic questions, it's, I think, just as important to know what the question was in addition to seeing what the answer is. And so there were various things reported from leading Torah scholars in Israel about this. But I will say that it may be unclear what exactly the question was and what exactly their position would be in every practical question. But even from what was reported, there were different perspectives. Sometimes the news even changed the report about a particular person. So back in March, soon after the school system and shuls shut down in Israel, so Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who actually later, more recently, got COVID and then Baruch Hashem recovered, so he had been reported initially to be hesitant to close the schools, but then shortly after, once schools were closed and once it was clear that the government required that, there was a report that he said that anyone who violates Israel's health ministry directives, saying that such a person has a din of a rodev, is considered a pursuer, and Paskin then ruled that it's permissible to report shuls or institutions that violate health ministry directives to the police, even if the gabayim will be required to pay heavy fines or even face imprisonment. So he say there that it's a danger. He says that those who violate the COVID regulations are rotim, are pursuers. They're putting people at risk. They're putting people in danger. And at its most extreme, you're allowed to take any measures to stop a rodef. So he says that you're allowed to, if it will stop these people who he is saying are rotvim, are pursuers, so you'd be allowed to report them to the authorities to put a stop to it, even if they will be fined or even if they'll face imprisonment. Then more recently, there were conflicting reports from Rav Yitzhak Zilberstein. Yitzhak Zilberstein is a rabbi in Ramat Gan in Israel, and first, there was this, I don't call it wild ruling, that he said, the question was, if someone got COVID as a result of flouting the restrictions, should you daven for him? Or do we consider that it's like a person who, puts himself in danger? So there was a report that he said that you shouldn't daven for such a person. Which was, very extreme. And I think in general, he's been known to be very insistent that people follow the rules and observe the health regulations. So there was that ruling that was reported. And then shortly after, there was another report that there's an obligation to call the police when one finds a Jewish person ignoring health ministry's regulations. And then, most recently, this was in an article saying that then afterwards there was a report that he said one should not report to police violations of health regulations. Thought it was a little bit funny that they said that VAN News, Vos is Nes, one of the Jewish news sites, isn't reporting it while they were actually reporting it. But be that as it may, there were different reports of that. And it was also reported that Moshe Sternbach, the head of the Eda Haridus in Jerusalem, ruled further that one who informs police about yeshivas and Talmud Torah's opening or about illegal weddings cannot be included in a minyan. So you have both extremes. And it could be, again, it could be what question was asked, when it was asked. I don't know, but at least from what made the headline news, there were reports that, such as those from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, that those who violate COVID restrictions are considered a rodef, and you have to report them. And the other extreme is Rav Sternbach, who is quoted as saying that those who are known to report these violations can't be counted in a minyan. And then recently, I know Moish shared this with me, and it was making the rounds. There were reports that the Vishnitzer Rebbe, Yisrael Eger, Laws about ultra-Orthodox educational institutions would not again be shuttered as part of any renewed lockdown measures. And he said, cry out bitterly and strongly protest against all those Jews who snitch and inform on other Jews who open schools or hold celebrations. He's quoted as saying, to interfere with another Jew holding a celebration is an offensive and fundamentally unacceptable thing. So this is something that is definitely a live issue, and there are strong feelings on both sides, if they are both sides. Again, we don't know necessarily what questions were asked. So I'm going to ask you, just gut feeling, should you report it or not? You see someone violating COVID guidelines. What do you do?
I mean, you approach the individual first, give them a chance to correct themselves on their own. And if it's something that becomes communal, becomes a frightening thing that might be affecting others, right? Yeah, I mean, go to the rabbi before going to the government.
Right, so you say going to the government is really a last resort. Anyone else?
You know, only if you're really worried that people are going to be in danger. Like, you have the ability to distance yourself from a person who's openly breaking the rules, right?
Right. So you're saying not all COVID violations are created equal.
By choosing to be in their presence, though, meaning it's only a distancing issue if he's near people, so that the people also, it's not incumbent on the people to stay safe, but at the same time, to dafka put yourself in someone's space so that you can report them. I know people like that aggravate me.
I mean, my older son will gladly debate that we're not basing the government restrictions are not based on science. You know, they're coming from other angles. They want to kind of like control people and the flow of people. So if you go with this idea that the rules are not, they're not actually pikuach nefesh, it's just rules that are being given. I mean, it's still the government's rules.
Right, but you're saying just because it's the government's rules doesn't mean that we should report it.
I think there are people out there that think that, and unfortunately there's contingents of the community of Das Torah and even of the leftist scientist movement that feel a lot of it is politically motivated, and it does not. You know, there's no central voice, especially from the Canadian government, that's saying what you should and shouldn't do. Every state, every province has their own rule, every city, every county.
So the question is, prove to me that someone's breaking halacha by not wearing a mask.
Right. So let me ask it even more extreme case. Let's say it was April, and there were people, you know, that there was a minion going on in a basement. You know, people were crowded together in a basement. But anyone say that even if there was a potential danger, you still should inform the government? So in other words, everyone...
We can't live in a society where everybody decides to do whatever they want to do. There's rules and regulations. Otherwise, we have tohu vavohu. We have to listen to the experts, whether we agree with them or not. Otherwise, we have chaos.
I just want to tell you what Nathan is saying.
I'm guilty of getting speeding tickets on occasion. Not very often. Why? Because I didn't take the law seriously and I had to pay a fine.
Yeah,
I'm
but
not
this
sure.
Is with nefesh. This is people.
I'm not sure. I'm playing devil's advocate, or maybe I'm not. I'm not sure this is pikuach nefesh. Prove to me that wearing a mask is preventing people from dying. Because, I don't know, looking at the cases within the community, it seems that the most recent case that I know of that's in this community, the person was not exposed to anybody that had COVID, yet came down with it, and somehow nobody in her immediate circle caught it from her, even though, you know, she was living with her husband, her children. Nobody else got sick. Seems to me that this illness, this virus, is not being transferred in the way that we think, in the way that the scientists have been, or at least the newspapers have been presenting it.
Right. So it is unclear, and I actually want to get back to that when I look at one particular source. But I'll just ask the question again. Would anyone, and it's okay if not, but would anyone say that even if people are doing something that's dangerous, we still shouldn't report it? So that's a question I want us to think about, and let's look at some of the basic sources about the idea of Masira, of reporting, and see what those sources would suggest about this issue, about reporting wrongdoing. So really from the Torah and down into the Talmud and the legal codes, there is a very, very negative, and that's putting it lightly, view of those who will report Jews to the authorities. Really starting out, there's an allusion to this in Shmos when after Moshe kills the Egyptian, so then the next day he sees these two men fighting, and they say, I mean, this is in source 4, Vayomer mi samcha leish sar v'shofet aleinu al argeni ata omer kasher harak Jerakta Esa Mitzvah Vira Moshe Veyomar Khinoda Davar. So he said, they said to Moshe, who made you a man, a prince and a judge over us? Do you plan to slay me as you have slain the Egyptian? As Moshe became frightened and said, indeed the matter is known. So Rashi explained why did Moshe get frightened? Here Moshe in source 5, Kipshuto, but it says in Midrasho, it quotes the Midrashic explanation. Daglo al Al-Sharab Yisrael Rishayim de la Torin, that he saw that he was worried that the Jews were wicked men, that they were informers. And Amar Me'at Hashema Einem Royun Le'igail. And he said, maybe they're not worthy of being redeemed. So what was the sin that he was worried that would prevent them from being redeemed was the fact that they informed on one another. And The Talmud in Rosh Hashanah says an idea which many of us are familiar with, that even sinners will only spend 12 months in Gehenna, in the purgatory, and then afterwards they'll be able to go to heaven. So the Gemara says this. But except for certain people, certain people even will even be in Gehenna beyond the 12 months, and that includes the Haminin, the heretics, the Hamostros, and those who, the informers, Mashumadim, Vapikorsim, those who conferred out, those who are heretics, Shekafer B'Torah, and those who deny Chiyas HaMesim, Shepirshu Midarche Hatzibor, and those who separate from the congregation, and all of those will be judged for generations and generations, meaning they will be in Gehenna for a long period of time.
Would you not say that the informers really are like, for example, the people who informed the Nazis about Jews who were hiding? That's a different type of informer entirely.
So I might think that, but let's see the next couple of sources. I would think that, but if you look at the next couple of sources, it's not at all clear. So the Gemara in Gittin, in number 7, tells a story about Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva was very upset because there were some bullies, there were some people, other Jews who were tormenting him. And he says, he sent a letter to Rabbi Lazar, and he says, B'nei Adam ha'omdi malai v'yad l'masram l'malchus ma'u. There are those people who are tormenting me, and I have the ability to report them to the government. So the government will take care of them. What should I do? So Rabbi Lazar sent back, and he writes the following verse from Tehillim. Eshma derachai chato bilshoni, eshma lefi machsom ba'od rasha le'negdi. So he said, the verse from Tehillim says, I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I do not sing with my tongue. I will keep a curb upon my mouth while the wicked is before me. So what does that mean? Afal pisha, rasha lenegdi, even though the wicked person is before me, eshmera lefi machzom. Nevertheless, I will put a muzzle on my mouth. Meaning send a message, even if they're bullying you, don't say anything. And he quotes this pasuk from Tehillim. So then Mar Ukva sends back, Says Kamitzar li tuva velo matzini yidikam behu. But Maruva says, but they're torturing me a lot. They're really, and I can't stand them. So Rabbi Elazar sends him back. And he quotes another pasuk in Tehillim, Dom Lashem, resign yourself to Hashem. He's kolel lo, and he's kolel, patiently wait for him. So it's Dom Lashem, what does it mean, resign yourself to Hashem? V'yavilim l'cha chalalim chalalim, meaning that he will strike them down as many corpses. So what does Rabbi Elazar mean by this? He gives Mar Ukva the following advice. Hashkim Arab Alayan the base of Medrash, Vehain Khalin Melehin. He says, Mar Ukva, I'll tell you what to do. Don't report them. Go early to the base Medrash. Stay late there. Avoid these people. And then they're going to disappear on their own. So Mar Ukva took this advice. And then the person who was tormenting him, his neck was put in a neck iron, like one who was sentenced by the government. So, but the advice there, in addressing Mr. Froin's question, is: does it sound like this is only speaking that this is speaking about people who inform on innocent Jews to people like the Nazis?
So, Rabbi, these examples here are one-on-one, and it's easy to give one person their advice, but when it comes to COVID or when it comes to the Holocaust, where we're talking, it's not a one-on-one situation. These are completely, these examples don't really tell you the story about what to do when
that may be true, and in fact we'll see some of the codes do address the difference between an individual and what it causes suffering to an individual as opposed to the community. But what it says here is, it says even if someone is causing you a hard time, that's not clear what they were doing, but there was enough from Mar Ukva to one make this complaint, and after Rabbi Elazar gives his advice, he says, no, but they're really tormenting me. Rabbi Elazar says, basically, keep your mouth shut and let God take care of it, but don't report them to the government.
That's the way Jewish people generally are, by the way, when it comes to themselves, right? I think we, as Jews, I think that's exactly how we behave when it comes to our personal situations.
And is that good?
Well, when I hear an inclination that someone's talking about bullying, I think of mental health. Certainly, we're adults or we're family members. We can help protect our own. It's an individual. But if it gets to the point that a person's mental health is being targeted and exposure to these bullies is going to make them feel, that they're desperate. Then you have to take it to the next level. I mean, if someone is affecting my family in that way, there comes a point where, yes, I need authorities. I need to take this situation to court or whatever it is to stop the bullying behavior from repeating if it's getting to a point that the harm is something that I can't handle on my own.
So I was thinking the exact same thing when I was putting this together. I was thinking the example of bullying. And it does sound like that. It sounds like Rabbi Elazar is saying, avoid this bully, and then Hashem will take care of it, but don't report him to the authorities.
The difference, I think when we're talking COVID, there's the question of, when the blatant statement is, the ruling is, we have to behave a certain way to protect ourselves. Where do you find Torah saying that that's something that needs to be taken so seriously?
We'll see. I just want to lay the foundation for just how we view Masira, how it's viewed classically, and what type of considerations would be exceptions to it. So if you bear with me for a few minutes, we'll get there.
Even Christians talk about turn the other cheek.
Right, so I don't know if this is turn the other cheek, meaning it, right. I mean, at the end of the day, they're saying he'll get his due, but it's not for you to report. The next story is also illustrates how Masira is used. The next story, I won't read it all inside, but it tells a story about Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar was the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and you know they were in the cave together, you know, studying for 12 years, and then apparently afterwards Rabbi Elazar had this intuitive ability to catch thieves. And so there was a person, a Jewish person, who had been appointed by the Roman government as basically the assistant DA. You know, he's catching all the thieves, he's doing the investigation, and he comes to Rabbi Elazar and says, you know, my job is really hard. How am I supposed to know who's guilty or not? You know, these thieves, by their profession, are very good at hiding their ways. So Rabbi Elazar says to him, I'll show you what to do. He said, he says, at the fourth hour of the day, in the morning, enter the tavern. When you see someone drinking wine, holding his cup in his hands and dozing, to inquire about his background. So if he's a Torah scholar and is dozing, meaning that's if you identify him as a Torah scholar, so then assume that he was up since early morning for his studies. And he's a day laborer, so assume that he arose early and performed his work. He also says it's around 10 in the morning. Maybe a day laborer awoke at 4 in the morning. He's already tired. And if he works at night, but no one heard him working, so then assume he's working with wires and it doesn't produce noise. But if it's none of these, if you don't identify any of these conditions, then assume he's a thief, right? He's just dozing off in the middle of the day because he was spending the entire night last night robbing people's houses. Then report him. That's why he's so tired. So apparently, the matter of the advice of Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, was heard in the king's palace. And the king's minister said to him, let the reader of the letter be its messenger, meaning the person to whom Elazar was giving this advice, the official assistant DA, was, he had told someone that, you know, this person, Elazar, he's the one who's giving me all these tips. So the government said, well, let's get him, let's hire him, and he'll be the one to crack down on all these crimes. So they hired Elazar, and then he proceeded to arrest thieves, and he was very successful at this, at identifying who these thieves were and who these Jewish thieves were. So Rishu ben Karcha sent a letter to him, and he says, Chometz ben Yayin, vinegar, the son of wine, referring to his father, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. He said, Ad maza ya'ata moser rochel elokeinu lariga. Until when will you inform on the nation of God to be sentenced? And when you were found by the Roman government, so you were sentenced to death. So Elazar said, I'm merely eradicating thorns from the vineyard, meaning these are undesirable people. They're not a benefit to our community, certainly, and I'm just getting rid of those. What do you want from me? I'm causing bad people to be punished. And they replied to him, Bishim B'dikor replied to him, Yovo Balakarim Vikala Ez Kotsav. Let the owner of the vineyard, meaning God, come and eradicate his own thorns. Similar idea. The advice seems to be, don't report even people who are doing unethical things, immoral things, and let God take care of it. So that seems to be a perspective that we find in the Talmud. And the legal codes, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, as I mentioned, speak very, very harshly about a moser. The Rambam says in Source 9, Aser limsara adam biyada akum, it's forbidden to inform a colleague to the Gentiles, bein begufo bebe mamono, whether it's with his body or monetarily, afilo haya rashu val averos, afilo haya meitzar lo umetzaro, even if he's a wicked person who commits sins, and even if he causes irritation and discomfort to the community. Meaning, even a person who's causing trouble, don't report him to the authorities. Whoever reports someone to the non-Jewish authorities, whether it's he'll be physically punished or monetarily punished, he doesn't have a portion in the world to come, presumably based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we saw.
Are we assuming that the Israeli government falls under this category?
So that's what we're going to see. If we look back on the first three articles that reported these opinions, all of those had to do in were in Israel. So we'll see if there's a difference. There are some opinions that it is, but the recent reports about either the permission to report or being critical of those reports has taken place in Israel. But we'll see, that's a good point. So far, all of these sources are speaking about reporting to a Gentile government. What about a Jewish government? It'll say that a government of Jews, but that doesn't operate according to halacha. We'll see if it's different by virtue of the fact that we're dealing with Jews.
Rabbi, it should be important to really look at the category of what you're reporting, because I mean, something like Bikuach Nefesh, that even overrides halachas on Shabbos. So if it's somebody stealing, it's not a Pikuach Nefesh situation. If somebody is, you know, doing, so it's, I think it should depend on what is the person doing that's wrong? How serious it, how is it going to affect other people or the community? Is it a life and death situation? Or is it just that this guy is stealing money or he's damaging property? Okay, so it's a monetary thing, but it's not a life and death situation.
So if you bear with me for a few more minutes, I will get to that. But excellent point. Excellent, excellent question. So we said even if someone is causing trouble, we won't report him. And it goes even further.
Are you seeing Debbie's question?
Let me go to... Where did the chat go?
Do you see what Debbie's written there? She wrote, so to clarify, if I see a Jew breaking into a house, I am not allowed to call the police? Interesting.
So we're... this isn't meant to be practical, but... This is how these are addressed in classical sources, meaning in the older sources. And I mentioned at the beginning, one of the things that we're going to look at is are our governments, you know, whether the U.S. or Canada, you know, or Israel, different than the governments that were under discussion? At the times of the Gemara, we're speaking about, well, back in the beginning, we're speaking about the Egyptians, then we're speaking about the Romans. According to the Rambam's times, we're speaking with the Egyptians or the Arab nations. So the question is going to be, do we view Masira differently under the circumstances in which we live? But according to, well, we'll say two things. With breaking into one's house, if someone breaks into your house, you're actually allowed to kill him because we're worried that he may kill you. But I would take Debbie's question, maybe it's, so that could be a different story. To stop someone in the act, that's a different story. You may be able to use any means necessary. As far as, let's say you know about a robbery, under the situations that, or in the sources that we've seen, it seems that it's at least questionable. But if you bear with me, I think we'll be able to clarify some of these questions. Just to continue, how serious, at least traditionally, a moser has been viewed, the Rambam continues in source 10, Mutar laharog ha-moser, bekol makom. It's permitted to kill a moser. Look at that, it's permitted to kill a moser in any place. Afilu bizman hazeh, the Rambam is writing in his times, even in our times. The Shulchan Aruch also writes this. She'ein don in dinin nefashos. Right, nowadays we don't have a court to adjudicate capital cases. We say it's permitted to take in your own hands to kill a moser. Mutal hargo kodam shiyimsor elisham harini moser ploni begufa oba mamono, and it's permitted to kill him before he informs. Afilo mamon kal hitaratz melamisa, even for money of minimal value, he's basically permitted himself to be killed. Umasrin lo, you warn him. The omrim lo al timsor, and you say to him, don't inform. You know how he's pana the omer lo ki ela zareda mitzvah lahargo v'kol hakodim lahargo zaka. But if he says no and he's brazen enough to inform, it's a mitzvah to kill him. There's a Shulchan Aruch. Both of these Rambam Shulchan Aruch quotes very similarly.
Rabbi, why did the Rambam say such a thing? Why did he say that? What is his basis for that?
So it's from what we've seen earlier with the fact that Masira is quoted so serious, but it was your question, meaning why are you allowed to kill a Moser? So if you look at source 11, the Bishua Falk, because his commentary Meira Sanayim, known as the Sma and Shulchan Aruch, why are you allowed to kill a Moser, right? Totally excellent question. We don't just say you can go and kill people. Yesh le Moser din Rodef, because a Moser is considered like a Rodef, like a pursuer. It's as if he's coming and threatening your life, so you are allowed to, so in those situations, you are allowed to stop him in his tracks. And I think if we consider this, we have to also consider what type of societies are under discussion. We'll see if any of our societies are different, but at least from what we see now, I think why Masira is considered so serious is because the societies in which Jews lived were lawless societies, and if anything, the Jewish community was treated more harshly than other people in the populations, and the penalties were extremely severe. And like Michael had mentioned, there were cases, and there's really a long history of Jews informing, let's say, to the Christian authorities, or even more recently to the Nazis, and that it was viewed in that context of really conspiring with the government, who was really considered the enemy. You know, they treated the Jews like the enemy.
So in this case, the enemy is the person who's doing the wrongdoing.
That's true. But to take the bullying example, let's say you knew that if you told the authorities that someone's bullying, they would then, let's say, kill the person and maybe go and kill all of their family. I mean, these are the societies we were speaking about. So just to put some perspective on why it's considered so serious is because the societies were lawless, and they would use that as an excuse to then, you know, target the Jewish community in other ways. You know, let's say they were to say that someone was engaged in some sort of financial wrongdoing. So you tell the government, and they'd go and, you know, ransack a Jewish town. I think that was the reality, and then that's part of the reason why it's considered so serious. However, even again, we'll get very shortly to if we consider it differently in modern times, societies in which we live. But even within the, if we're assuming we're dealing with the old system, or if we assume that there is no difference between, we don't distinguish between governments that have laws and those that don't, there are still cases where it's permitted to inform authorities. It's not a blanket, it's not a prohibition that isn't waived in any case. So one case is if someone, and I think Charlie mentioned this, if someone is causing difficulty and irritation, not just to an individual, but to the community. So the Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, in source 12, Urtsibor mitzarin mutter lomasro biyadakum la koso la astro la kanso. That's someone who causes difficulty and irritation to the community may be handed over to the Gentiles to be beaten, imprisoned, and fined. Right? Someone is harming the community and then is disrupting it, so then you are allowed to report them, even if they'll be punished severely. But for one individual, it's forbidden to inform. So there are, we'll get to whether we can say that our societies are, that we treat it fundamentally different. Before we get to that, it seems like the position is somewhere in the middle. I mean, we don't have a permit to just say everything, but we do treat it somewhat differently. But there was a question, if we're going with this, again, with the more classic definition, about someone who's causing difficulty and irritations to the community, so how might that apply to the following case? The following case, it was asked by the Vod of Baltimore, to Moshe Feinstein, whether they could report someone who forged kashrus seals and affixed them to non-kosher meat. But it was known that an individual in the Baltimore community was doing this. So are you allowed to report him, based on what we've seen?
Yes. Yes.
Most definitely. Because he's causing other people to eat grape.
Uh-huh. We've seen other cases where people are harming other people in other ways. So Moshe says that in theory, there is a concern for Mesira if he's reported to the government because he could potentially be fined and incarcerated because he's probably subject to consumer fraud laws. And you said that, and that would be problematic because halachically, someone in this position, we would just disqualify him from selling kosher products. Right? He would lose his cheskas kashrus, his presumption of trustworthiness. But we wouldn't, he says, halachically, we wouldn't fine him or imprison a person like that. We would just, but we'd make sure that he couldn't sell kosher products. And he says, if by reporting him he's going to be put in jail or he's going to be fined, that may be problematic from a Mesira perspective. But he says it's permitted to inform government.
Right. Do you see what Debbie just wrote? What about a sexual predator? And it's funny because I was thinking the same thing over the past little while. You know, there comes a point, it's no mitzvah to protect somebody who's got criminal intent. If the person who was, responsible for disturbing trace, could it be a mistake? I mean, I heard of a situation where one of the cleaners used some sort of a natural product, like an oil from an animal, and that caused the whole machinery, whatever it is, to trace up the food. That's almost like, can you excuse it? I mean, by kashrus, you can't really excuse these things, but from using your logic, mistakes can happen. If someone's intentions are, one way, but if someone's intentions are to be criminal, if somebody has a deficiency and they're incapable of behaving properly, there's no mitzvah in protecting them from whom? Protecting them from punishment, from rehabilitation?
Right. So it's a sexual predator, but the one that the postman say that yes, but we'll actually get to that case. We the Chuva by Rabbi Lezer Waldenberg, Tzitz Eliezer, who mentions that exact case.
There's been cases recently, I mean, Zalman...
And I say, unfortunately, the Mesira card is pulled in many of those cases, and unfortunately results in abusers either not being stopped or being able to go to one institution to the next, and it's definitely a problem.
I think the corruption is escalated. I sat with prominent rabbanim time and time again over 20 years battling where the primary concern was not the victim/survivor. The primary concern is, what about the abuser's extended family and reputation?
Right, unfortunately, that's...
words.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's an attitude. I think there's been... you could tell me if, you know, if I'm wrong, but my impression is there been some positive development in that approach, but probably not quick enough.
I think there's been progress in terms of helping victims. I don't think there's been progress in terms of the rabbinic mindset, in terms of how to deal with the extended. Where's the person going to find the minion? Right? Why are we punishing three generations over one person?
Right. Unfortunately, you see their attitudes like that. Just on that point, because this has intersected with the issue of Rodef. Don't think it's the only one. We've heard of David Cohen, who's a postdoc in Brooklyn. So he says that a moser is, that a sexual predator is a Rodef. And he said, at the very least, you're allowed to stop a Rodef from completing his goals. So he says you're allowed to, at the very least, you'd be allowed to report someone and have them go to jail.
I wish Debbie's microphone was working, because she just read, what about Aguna? I think it's very interesting. You know, here we're talking about people who have malicious intent that could affect our community, could affect the masses. Someone who leaves their wife, you know, by herself without giving a get. I just kind of feel like, okay, so they've got somebody where the entire community understands that, you know, in most cases, this is a wrong way to leave a woman. Yet we make so many, we're so permissive. You know, it ends up being the woman who really struggles, you know, trying to get from her husband, and the husband's life is quite normal. He remarries.
Yeah, and it's so in Israel, there's, I think they actually do that. They actually put it, because that's just putting pressure on the husband. You know, there are certain people who, even from what we saw, are causing pain to their, causing really trouble to the community, or otherwise, it would be permissible, even according to the, call it, classical standards of Rodef. But we'll get to the case of abuser and things like this, because they're very important. So Rav Moshe says, in the case of the person selling kosher meat, first try to tell him he can't do it anymore and make sure that he doesn't. If he's not willing to listen, so then you can report him to the civil authorities in order to stop him. And I think the same could be said with the more so for an abuser. That you're allowed to, it seems to be acknowledged that even if you accept Masira as a factor, if you need to stop someone as opposed to just be purely punitive, but if you need to prevent harm, so he's saying that would be allowed. Another case where, even before we're getting to modern times, that you'd be allowed to get government authorities involved is, let's say, it's the community shares responsibility for safety upkeep. So are you allowed to report someone who doesn't contribute to that? And this is based on a question I saw that was asked of Rav Herschel Schechter, who he said, if, let's say, everyone is required to keep their sidewalks paved and you know, so that people don't fall, and someone's just unwilling to do that, are you allowed to report them, you know, to the city, for the city to enforce them to upkeep their sidewalk? So he says, yes, you are, based on the following case. The Mishnah and Gemara and Vav Vastra say that, in general, residents of a community are required to contribute to certain funds. And one of them is the building of certain security measures, a gatehouse, a door, and it's required that everyone contribute to that fund. And if someone doesn't, the Shulchan, the Ramah in Source 15 says that they can force the minority, those who don't contribute, to comply, even through the laws of the Gentiles, and to extricate money from them in order for them to give their portion. So based on this, Rabbi Schechter said that that you'd be allowed to, if someone in the neighborhood is unwilling to upkeep their, you know, their sidewalks, and by doing so they're causing danger to the public, they're not feeling their responsibilities, who says you'd be allowed to get the government involved. So here is another reason that I actually heard one of my rebbeim said that he spoke to a posek who actually invoked this idea to allow, at least in certain cases, reporting COVID violations that you know, would be considered dangerous. So the Ramon says the following case. He said someone who's engaging in forgeries and the like, and there's a concern he's going to harm many people, so first warn him. And if not, yichol in the masro. Then you're allowed to report him to the non-Jewish authorities. Why are you allowed to do that? I mean, if we said there could be a problem with Mesira, even if someone is causing trouble. So the Bir Hagra, the Vilna Gaon, said in the number 17, that, because he's also, this person is a rodef. This person is actively causing harm. And he says even further, va'af she'ein miskaven, even if he doesn't intend to cause harm, va'af she'eino rak rama, or even if the harm is only indirect. So he illustrated with the following case. Let's say in the height of the pandemic, there were, you know, people, let's say, gathering in a minyan in a basement, tightly packed together. Not and a question was asked in the New York area where it was very bad. So let's say that's the scenario we're talking about. But it's a group of younger people who are low risk. So what do you do? And you know about this minyan going on. So maybe you could say that statistically, younger people are not as negatively affected by the virus, even though they can get it, but the death rate is much, much lower. However, what could happen? They're all at this minyan, and they get COVID, and then they visit their friend, and their friend gets COVID, and then their friend goes to their grandmother's house, and she's at higher risk, and then she dies, God forbid. So that's the case that... That's what he's saying. It's not intentional, obviously. I would hope so. Maybe I'm naive, but I think that those people who flouted the restrictions, they don't intend to cause harm. And it's not direct. But
here, that exact scenario has been spelled out. Don't do it because your friend, to a grandmother, to a tragic outcome. It's not like it hasn't been told to everybody involved, saying this is one of the reasons why this is such an issue.
Being so they should know better. I mean, they can't claim ignorance.
Yeah. But it's hard to call somebody a rodef when they are in a state of ignorance. The people that attend these minyan and the people that attend simchas, whatever it is, don't know that they're walking around with COVID. If you say, if someone's been diagnosed and they know they have COVID-19 and they go into a public situation, they don't socially distance, definitely they're a rodef. But Zalman or I, we happen to think we're healthy, we have no symptoms, so me choosing not to wear my mask properly or not to socially distance from my friends or to be a little bit, I guess, closer in larger groups, that makes me a rodent. I might be perfectly healthy.
Right, so again, with practically this question is subject to many variables, but the point that came out of there is it's not only considered a rodave if it's intentional or if it's direct. So it could be one factor that may permit, if the situation is clearly dangerous, may permit reporting. So now we get to the second part that is moving a little bit slowly. What about nowadays? Are we speaking about the Roman times and the times of the Rambam even in Europe, in the last century or the centuries before. What about nowadays? What about in societies that are relatively civilized? So the Aruch HaShulchan says that fundamentally the laws of Moser apply to an unjust government where there are no laws, where it's just, you know, bandits and the government is looking to enrich itself and, you know, there's no due process. But he says in our times, under the Kiyama Rusia, under the Tsar of Russia and the King of the British, the Tsar of Russia, I don't know how great he was, but he's saying even he lived in Lithuania in the turn of the 20th century. maybe at that point there were at least some basic laws. And he said that a lot of the laws pertaining to Moser wouldn't apply in a society that has laws and laws that are enforced. And the Hershel Schechter, based on this idea, says, and this is 19, there's no problem of Masir in informing the government of a Jewish criminal, even if they penalize the criminal with a punishment more severe than the Torah requires, because even a non-Jewish government is authorized to punish and penalize above and beyond the law. And one of the seven Noahide laws is to establish courts for the purpose of maintaining law and order. He says, however, and this is key, this applies only in a situation when the Jewish offender or criminal has at least violated some Torah law. But if he did absolutely nothing wrong in the eyes of the Torah, then giving him over to the government would constitute a violation of Masira.
So where does Rabashkin fall into all of this?
Okay, so you would have to look at different cases, but...
Well, the question here in 19 is when it says the problem of the Torah, is he talking specifically about Yisurim d'Oraisa, or would he include even Yisuri d'Rabbanan in that statement?
I think it would include something that's forbidden by Halacha. I would think d'Rabbanan as well. But saying if you're doing... Right, if there's a law that, I don't know, everyone has to wear pink socks on Thursday, and someone's not... You know, and someone's wearing green socks, so and something like that. Okay, even though he's saying the government has a right to have laws and is allowed to enforce them, but you can't report someone for something that's, you know, just not at all forbidden by Jewish law.
Rabbi, doesn't the Torah say that we have to follow the laws of the land in which we live?
So yes. The scope of that is a whole other discussion. We could have a whole shiur on that. At the very least, it refers to taxation and financial laws. But there are limits. If the law is unjust, certainly if the law requires us to do things that violate the Torah, that could be another story. But generally, yes. Based on the consideration that maybe our societies are different, Tzitzi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, addresses the case, which unfortunately is more common than it should be, is a case of a teacher in a school who's abusing a student or is known to abuse students. So Tzitzi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, at number 20, says that it's permitted to report the person. And he says not only because, you know, he was in Israel, but he says not only because you have the Aruch HaShulchan who said that in under civilized governments you'd be allowed to, even if not, because he says, remember we said that even someone who's a Baal Aveira, who does Aveiros, who's a sinner, who causes pain to people, that you're not allowed to report him, he says... In our case, if it's through, so the case that we saw in the Rambam, that if someone is does averas and is a thorn in the side of the community, then you're still not allowed to report it. He says Tzitzi Eliezer says that's talking about someone who, in general, is a sinner, but what they do is something what's under question is something different. For example, let's say a guy, he's always a drunk, he's always playing loud music at night, and then he does something else. So he says, I'll say this, let's say someone's whatever it may be, he always disrupts shul, and you know, he's someone who's not a desirable member of the community. He says you're still not allowed to report him. But he says it's different in our case because you'd be allowed to report if that's the specific thing that he's doing that you would want to report him for. So here, that thing that he's doing, the way in which he's a Baal Aveira, he's saying, is through him abusing the children. So you're allowed to report him for that. It just don't say that, meaning... I'm trying to be clear about this. Meaning, don't say that because someone does other things, that means we would report him, whereas we wouldn't report a more upstanding member of the community. He says that's what the Rambam means. Don't say, I wouldn't report a more upstanding community member of the community, but because this person isn't such a good guy, I'll report him. That's what's not allowed, is to discriminate based on that. But if he's actually causing threat to the community, and that's what makes him a sinner, so you'd be allowed to report that.
You shouldn't be doing it on the basis of holding a grudge.
Right. I think that would be that's definitely part of it. Is don't say, well, he's not the the most pious person. Therefore, for something we wouldn't report someone else for, we'll report him. That's what it means. But not if the thing that is causing a threat to the community, you're allowed to report for that. So now the question is, what about in Israel? Is Israel any different? Because Israel is the people enforcing the law are Jewish, but...
Rabbi, yeah. What about the situation with what he's causing to the children? He's going to disrupt their lives for the future.
So that's what he's saying. Exactly. You can stop him from causing harm to others. I haven't made that clear. He says you are allowed to report. He says you're allowed to report even if we didn't consider our contemporary governments different than those in earlier times. Even under the Romans, he's saying you'd be allowed to report it.
Right.
I think another distinction, it's not punitive, it's preventative. So what about Israel? Is Israel any different? Because generally the people enforcing the laws are Jewish, but the Israeli legal system doesn't function according to halacha. So is that considered a Jewish law system or not? So it's a debate. Some say that because the Bate Din, the rabbinic courts, aren't able to prosecute criminal matters, so it's as if they handed over control to the secular legal system, and therefore it's not it would not be Masira because it's essentially an arrangement between the rabbis and the secular court.
I think we see that's true with divorce.
Right. There is this cooperation because the Bate Din don't have the authority to impose punishments, but the secular courts can put people in prison. So Rav Herzog.
But also, they have the right to hold up a civil divorce now if a get is not in place.
Right, but halakhically, I don't think that would help. Meaning, it may legally allow a woman to remarry in Israel, but halakhically, without a get, unfortunately, a woman would not be allowed to remarry. So Rav Herzog said that in a rabbinic convention in Tel Aviv, after the establishment of the State of Israel, the rabbis unanimously voiced their opinion they wish to give up control of any jurisdiction of criminal matters. So therefore, it's almost as if there's, according to this opinion, it's almost as if there's a partnership. And look at the ideal system, the arrangement between the government and the Beis Din. So the Drasha Saran says that it used to be when there was a Sanhedrin and a king, so the Sanhedrin would judge matters, and they would do this in consultation with the king. But in the modern state of Israel, the Bate Din, the government, did not enjoy such a close enough relationship to facilitate this type of collaboration. So thus, the Bate Din could not uphold the Torah's criminal legal system, so they relinquished their jurisdiction over criminal law. Meaning the ideal system in the halakhic state would be the government, the ruling body, the king, would work with the courts, and they would determine how to punish people. And Israel doesn't work, so some took the approach that essentially we consider as if the rabbis gave their authority to prosecute criminal matters to the secular courts. And Rav Oldenburg, who we saw his response about a child abuser, so he says in general he takes the approach, he distinguished between Masira to a Jewish government and a non-Jewish government. It says, nonetheless, Rabbi Yashiv, Shalom Yashiv, does not appear to make such a distinction. Thus, even in Israel, one should consult the competent halakhic authority before reporting a suspected criminal to the civil authorities. So we see that in Israel, whether there's Masira at all is subject to debate. And as we saw from some of the from the sources, even if there could potentially be an issue of Masira, there are cases where we'd be allowed to report someone, particularly if they're causing harm on a communal level. So then when it comes to COVID, so that's the big question. And I think if there are any practical questions, you know, to be asked to a posek. But the big question, as people have said, is if you can determine that a real danger is being posed, so then it would seem there'd be grounds to report, even if the danger isn't direct. Again, can you say that every single legal regulation, if not adhered to, poses danger, even indirect? You know, that's also a question. So as we can leave it as a little bit of a question, I mean, if there are any practical cases, you know, ask a posek, but you know, this issue of Masira, unfortunately, it's abused, and as Zalman said, particularly in the area of child abuse, with using that, the Masira card, but it is a serious halakhic issue, and we have to balance the, you know, halakhic mandate to not protect the wrongdoing within our community, but make sure that our community doesn't get treated unfairly. At the same time, to be careful that doesn't cause us to allow other people to be harmed, you know, by the not reporting. So, any practical questions? Ask a posek, but it's definitely a lot said about this now, and a lot to think about. And hopefully, the virus will go away, and all sizes of minyanim and smachot and everything will be totally legal.
Man,
looking for.